The following program is a PBS Wisconsin original production.
Coming up on Wisconsin Life, we meet an observatory director looking to the sky, the star of a beloved bingo show, a musician preserving Hmong history, and a pair of entrepreneurs offering up fun, jai. That's all ahead on Wisconsin Life.
Funding for Wisconsin Life is provided by the Wooden Nickel Fund, Mary and Lowell Peterson, the ACV and Mary Elston Family, the Obradovich Family Foundation, the Stanley J. Cottrell Fund, Alliant Energy, UW Health, donors to the Focus Fund for Wisconsin Programs, and friends of PBS Wisconsin.
Sound amazing. Thank you so much. And welcome to Wisconsin Life. I'm your host, Angela Fitzgerald. We're on a mission to discover a place where science and art collide by joining the Blackbird Creative Lab as they take over Yerkes Observatory. The observatory in Williams Bay continues to play an important role in astronomy, but for 2 weeks, it transforms into a constellation of musical creativity. Grammy Award-winning ensemble, Eighth Blackbird, welcomes a cohort of musical ensembles and composers for an immersive, creative experience. During their time here, musicians receive mentorship, collaborate, and experiment, all while composing new musical arrangements inspired and created for this historic space. Before we get back to the music, let's narrow our lens and learn more about the largest refracting telescope in the world, found right here. And focus in on the deputy director at Yerkes Observatory, working to revitalize this space through science and art.
I wanna go to space. I wanna break free. You ready?
With a song in her heart and stars in her eyes, Dr. Amanda Bauer is ready to show off Yerkes Observatory.
It's known for having the world's largest refracting telescope.
There we go.
1897 is when it first opened its eye on the skies. The dome moves around 360 degrees to allow for the telescope to be able to point in any direction. It really innovated the way that astronomy was done. It was the last big refractor built because when you see it, you see how mechanically amazing and huge scale it is.
The entire observatory floor at 90 feet wide serves as a giant elevator, the largest in Wisconsin. Lifting astronomers up to the Great Refractor Telescope and into the heavens.
There's a magic to it in using it. It's so hands-on that just takes you to a different space.
As the new deputy director, one of Amanda's first jobs, to make sure the telescopes still function.
They hadn't been used in 5 years, and I hadn't used a refracting telescope in a while, so just kind of getting my hands in there and seeing if it worked.
Okay, looks good.
You know when you wake up and you're like, ooh, and you creak? That's what the telescope was doing. Spectacular. It was like understanding the magic that people have been seeing for generations.
Amanda also provides this stargazing station a first.
I'm the first woman in 125 years who has been the head of science here in this observatory.
She hopes to expand her own horizons with further research.
My area of expertise is galaxy evolution.
Amanda joins a long list of famous astronomers who peered into the galaxy with this exact telescope.
Edwin Hubble is absolutely one of the most famous names that people have heard. The next big telescope that NASA is going to launch is named the Nancy Grace Roman Telescope because she went from Yerkes to become the very first chief of astronomy at NASA. Carl Sagan was one of my first idol astronomers. This observatory is so historic. So many people have come through here.
One legacy those astronomers left behind is a massive collection of images from our galaxy and beyond.
We have 180,000 glass plates that capture these images of the cosmos over the last 125 years, and that's useful in research today. The glass plates that are here are spectacular. This is Comet Morehouse. It was discovered by a student who was here in 1908. What we're doing is reinvigorating that research program, bringing it back after kind of a dormant couple decades, because it does have opportunities to use these telescopes to train the next generation of students.
Yerkes Observatory also pioneered a historic discovery.
The shape of the Milky Way galaxy is spiral arms, and they determined that here.
Despite the scientific history here, its future was up in the air. Over the years, the observatory had fallen into disrepair.
No one knew what was going to happen to this building and the glass plate collection and the telescopes. How can we resurrect and reimagine what this observatory can do?
In 2020, the Yerkes Future Foundation bought the observatory from the University of Chicago.
The modern day purpose of this observatory is really bringing research, art, culture, a cross-disciplinary approach to big ideas. So tying that art and science together in every facet of what we do is pretty fun, it's pretty unique. You can come here and get a sense of the magnitude of what was undertaken and the types of discoveries that were made over the last 125 years. You get to see the biggest refracting telescope in the world. You get to hear these stories come alive about what has happened in this building.
And you might just encounter a ukulele-playing astronomer who reached for the stars.
I want to go to space. I want to float free. Help me escape the force of gravity.
Next up, we join an artist in Madison who's found their calling to educate and entertain. Brandon Rounds is a cat dad, an artist and ambassador.
I'm originally from Bosque, about southwest Wisconsin. If you hold up your hand, down here is where I'm from.
The goal is to be done by 5. Show's at 6.
I had to move to realize what was outside of a small town.
Outside of his rural upbringing, Brandon found a new circle of friends and the spotlight.
The end.
Bam. You guys got the good makeup tonight.
Brandon is also known as the drag artist, Bianca Lynn Breeze.
Madison, make some noise for Bianca Lynn Breeze.
When people come to a drag queen bingo, they expect the high glamour and they want to see, you know, something that's just over the top. want people to understand that drag is nothing but an art form. You remember when you're a kid and you always played bingo in school or maybe at your church? It's like that excitement, but amplified by like 100.
All right, here we go. First number, I, 16. I am 16.
Drag Queen Bingo is just super fun.
Bianca entertains sold-out crowds in venue after venue, greeting bingo fans with humor and humility.
My humor comes from sarcasm.
Is that rule okay with you guys?
And everyday life happenings to me. But also, you know, I'm a dude wearing heels. I've been doing it for 12 years. I still can't even walk on heels sometimes.
Brandon uses his small town experience as a catalyst for change in high heels and a wig.
A lot of my events and a lot of my bingos tend to be in the smaller communities just outside of Madison.
Hello, Oshkosh, make some noise!
After a while, I started to realize that the reason why I'm doing drag is to help educate our communities.
When we're in drag and there's all this glamour, people are gonna notice you and they're gonna stop and they're gonna listen to what you have to say. And that's what's beautiful about drag.
That approach could be even more important as drag performers find themselves in the political crosshairs.
We have so much hatred against the LGBTQ community, against drag queens in general. And I want to be that resource for people to answer questions for them if they have questions. Bianca's personality is somebody that anybody can come up to her and ask her anything. I don't care, I'm an open book.
Bingo going once, bingo going twice, bingo going three times.
For some people, bingo is that aha moment.
A lot of people don't know what drag is or have never met a drag queen in their life.
How many of you have played bingo with us?
And then after an event, people are like, you know, I had so much fun tonight. Thank you for opening my eyes. I can't even count the amount of times I've had people say that to me.
Make some noise for a winner.
We need to continue to be happy, show people what happiness is, what love is, what kindness is.
Kindness is a trait Brandon learned from his mother growing up in that small town.
I lost my mom in 2008, 15 years ago. She was always an uplifting person in our community. Since then, I just feel like I have to be a positive person. I have to be uplifting because you never know when your last day is gonna come around.
Inspired by his mother, Brandon took her name as part of his drag persona.
And I said, why don't I wanna be just Bianca? I wanna be Bianca Lynn, because that was my mom's middle name.
That tribute brought Brandon closer to his mom and a drag identity that taught him something else.
When I was younger, I was very reserved. Bianca instills a little bit of confidence in Brandon. Bianca is somebody that people come to see, and all of the attention is on her, and she gets to buy all the flashy costuming, and she gets to do the fun makeup and the glitter and the sparkle. You'll have to come in further because there's more stuff. I'm just waiting for these shelves just to break. Brandon's a little bit more professional in life, but Bianca's taught Brandon to do that because Bianca makes some money, so Brandon has to be able to know how to spend that wisely.
Brandon has also transformed Bianca into one of Wisconsin's premier drag bingo entertainers.
Literally, glitter, rhinestones, and a wig. We're all trying to get through this thing that we call life, to find joy and passion in what we do. It's made me feel like I've really found a place to express who I am.
I'm at Yerkes Observatory, joining the Blackbird Creative Lab, who are bringing music into focus at this cosmic site.
I caught up with the directors of the lab, who are also founding members of the music group 8th Blackbird, to learn more.
We really started talking about how can we bring together the pieces of all these different programs we've ourselves attended to make our own program. In 2017, we founded the Blackbird Creative Lab,
We look back at our struggles, the mistakes that we made, and the things that took us too long to learn. We wanted to create a space that serves that demographic of emerging professionals.
Wow, so that's quite a journey from you all as musicians to now creating a space for other artists to engage with.
It's a very intense program and it's designed to be that way. We really wanted to develop the curriculum to what the cohort's needs were.
And they're not asking about how do I compose music or how do I play my instrument. They're saying, how do I manage my finances? How do I read a contract? And this program is very intentionally geared toward the whole human of the emerging artist, not just performance. And even this place, the Yerkes Observatory, is a teaching vehicle. This is an extraordinarily unique concert hall.
I mean, it's not even a concert hall.
Exactly. Right,
so managing sound at an observatory is quite different.
But I think, too, that our partnership with Yerkes has been so beautiful. We are not creating work that's in the science field, which is what Yerkes is known for, but we hope that we're bringing in folks who are incredibly innovative in art.
Folks like composer Julia Moss and the group Sputterbox are cohorts of this year's program.
So I'm writing a piece called Growing Pains. It's about the mourning process of sort of growing and splitting off from old parts of yourself and how that can be nostalgic and scary and hard, but also a positive thing for moving forward.
That is interesting and relatable.
Yes.
So what is it like creating in this specific space?
We've really had an open and vulnerable process here. I really think that this piece couldn't have been what it was if it wasn't in this space together. And also at the Yerkes Observatory, it's so resonant and beautiful.
From composition.
How about we start from letter J?
To practice. To performance. The Blackbird Creative Lab offers emerging musicians an out-of-this-world space to create and play. We now go to Milwaukee, where a musician tells stories through his instrument while preserving the past.
I would say being connected to your identity gives you purpose, value, and a reason why. Especially when I was in college.
I'm in my last year of my master's program studying clinical rehabilitation counseling. As a young Hmong American male, I've used this instrument to help me navigate my experiences as well as preserve our culture.
The only thing that I could use as an outlet to explore my identity or remind me of my identity was my instrument, the qeng. My name is Mason La Beng He, and I play the traditional Hmong instrument, qeng. The qeng is a woodwind instrument that is made out of bamboo, wood, tree bark, and alloyed reeds. The instrument is typically played at weddings, funerals, and at Hmong New Year's for entertainment purposes. So when we play the instrument, it does mimic the Hmong language. It can basically share our Hmong story. From our culture back then, as a displaced group of people. We didn't have a written language. We weren't able to communicate or write down our history. It was a lot of oral history. So one of the ways that we've been able to preserve that is through qeng song. So I've been able to preserve those stories and also pass them down. So I was introduced to the instrument when I was 8 years old. Initially, it was my mother who wanted me to learn an instrument. Then my father wanted to come in and teach us. there are a lot of aspects to the instrument, so I am still learning myself. But we have created a relationship to now create stories together and share our stories as a father and son, as well as a student and a teacher. My favorite part about playing an instrument would be the therapeutic effects that I get from the instrument. So when I play the instrument, I do have to focus on breathing, in a sense, mindfulness breathing, as well as, again, being able to tell my story as a first generation college student. When I felt that I was alone, away from family, I could play the instrument and feel that I belonged or it was something that I was good at. I've definitely created a different relationship with the instrument rather than just using it for cultural purposes. The Geng is important because it is something unique to the Hmong people. You get to understand what your history is and why you are pursuing to be the person you want to be. It speaks importance to how music and this instrument can share stories as well as help generations heal together and communicate together.
Our last story takes us to Peshtigo to meet a couple finding growth in the rotting world.
Rot and decay are such negative words in our environment. They're just a crucial part of our life here on this planet.
This is a mushroom, like I said, very, very much in demand.
Without fungi, we would have no decay. Without decay, we'd be swimming in wood.
Our tagline of our company has always been proud to be part of this rotting world because we're just proud to represent that. The maitake is something that we find outdoors in the wild. My name is Mary Ellen Kozak, and I am co-owner of Field and Forest Products along with my partner and husband, Joseph. Joe and I both got interested in mushrooms probably from the very beginning. Both of us have Polish background, and there's a lot of interest in foraging. Fungi is a big thing in that population.
As a kid, I hated mushrooms. My grandfather taught my dad what mushrooms to pick.
I think that I learned a lot my very early years about foraging and food preparation through the family. Joe and I met in a mycology class. We both were students in the UW system. He was mostly interested in effects of fungi in plants, and I was mostly interested in eating fungi.
And also just eat right out of the pan.
That's pretty much as far as they go.
Yeah.
I was working for the Department of Natural Resources in Madison. The paper came across my desk on shiitake cultivation on natural logs, a potential new industry for the U.S. I said, Mary Ellen, we have access to the wood and the resources. Why don't we look into this?
So we decided that we wanted to pursue the idea of having a small business. We moved ourselves up to Peshtigo, Wisconsin, where we are now. We established our business on the family farm.
42 some years later, still doing what we set out to do back in the 80s, and we love it even more now than we did then.
Yeah, in 2017, we discovered that the farm just could not host the growth that we were experiencing.
It was a big challenge because we scaled up. What we do here is we maintain a culture bank of different fungi that we're currently producing. The process starts in our general lab where we take a parent culture and expand it into another media to increase the amount of mycelium we're producing. While that's growing, we take the raw materials which are needed for growing a specific culture.
Most of the fungi that we grow here are wood decay fungi, so they're growing on recently dead material.
Once things are sterilized, they go into our clean room, where we have technicians open the bags up, inoculate them, seal them, and then they go into incubation.
This cart is good to go, fully colonized, and ready to be moved out to the shipping area.
Given time, we reach that perfect stage of rot, which will then be used by the grower to expand into their substrate.
So for us to understand decay and not be afraid of it, and to be able to use it in a certain way to grow a food crop is a really cool thing for us.
We're picking everything today.
Oh, okay. Well, do a good job, Joe.
We just love mushroom cultivation.
Thank you.
It's a passion for us.
We've hit all the right notes with the Blackbird Creative Lab and have shared stories that have taken us to the stars and back. To discover more, visit wisconsinlife.org or reach out to us by emailing stories@wisconsinlife.org. I'm your host, Angela Fitzgerald, and this is Our Wisconsin Life. Bye.
Funding for Wisconsin Life is provided by the Wooden Nickel Fund, Mary and Lowell Peterson, the ACV and Mary Elston Family, the Obradovich Family Foundation, the Stanley J. Cottrell Fund, Alliant Energy, UW Health, donors to the Focus Fund for Wisconsin Programs, and Friends of PBS Wisconsin.